Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
So we've been talking a lot this week about the WhatsApp situation. We've been talking about Donald Trump being removed from Twitter, from Facebook, and then YouTube as well for a week. There's been an issue with Parler, which is a competitor, a smaller competitor to Twitter. AWS, Amazon have withdrawn their tech support of it, and it doesn't look like Parler will be able to continue. So what we're seeing, and certainly we're seeing it in Uganda as well, where Facebook have removed a whole lot of political accounts there. We are definitely seeing, and we spoke about it with Jan van Meulen from our broadband, we are seeing big tech getting more and more powerful and having a say in many issues, including domestic issues around the world. How do we deal with that? Joining us on the line, founder and director at Synthesis, Jake Shepherd. Let's try and figure that one out together. Jake, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Yeah, so I suppose if you thought 2020 was a rough ride, 2021 is starting even rougher.
Mm-hmm.
So both from a COVID point of view and also all these issues that you're mentioning.
So,
So I wanted to just maybe just mention off the bat, you know, when you're trying to discuss concepts like censorship, I think you really need to try and have a rational discussion about it.
Well, that takes care of most of us beings, then.
Exactly. As human beings, I think we can either think with our emotions or make decisions with our emotions, or we can make decisions with our rational mind. But we can't do both at the same time. So I think the problem with Trump is such a divisive figure. So you're like, you either love him or you hate him, that emotions are automatically stirred up when you're talking about the banning of Trump and the censorship of Trump. So when you start talking about censorship within the context of that, you actually, it's hard to have a rational discussion. So I'd actually prefer to leave the Trump side of things out, if I could, just because I think we're trying to actually get to the bottom of where the censorship's actually coming from, because it's actually a lot bigger than Trump. It's way bigger than that.
So in other words, remove him from the equation or the discussion, and then let's return to it and put the discussion about, apply the rules or our, what we've thought rationally back into that. Okay. I like that approach.
I think there are two aspects to censorship. There's the social aspect and there's a business aspect to censorship. So let's look at the business aspect of censorship. Where does that play into it? I think the social aspect is also incredibly important, and I'd maybe address it afterwards, but let's just look, because they're two separate points. And the one point of the business aspect is we need to understand that we all want our internet applications for free. You know, we want our Facebook for free. We want our Google search for free. We want our Gmail, our WhatsApp, everything we actually want for free. We don't have to pay for it, but somebody has to pay for it. And the person who's paying for it are the advertisers. And so effectively, you know, you've got advertisers, you've got commodities to sell. They want to have face time with you so that they can sell that. And they're prepared to pay for your access, effectively, your access to the internet and to all of these services. But in order to do that, the big tech companies need to collect data from you so that they can shape the advertising that you're seeing to make sure that the advertising you're seeing is going to be effective, because that's what the advertisers are paying for, is effective advertising. And ultimately, the advertisers are then very worried about what you, the audience, feels about their advertising being linked to, let's say, controversial content. So you can imagine a screenshot of a tweet, and right next to it is an advert for a particular company. That company is now linked with the content
associated with it. Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's associated with it. So you're looking at commercial interests, and you're looking at the advertisers putting huge pressure on social media companies, saying, don't link us with content that is going to be divisive, because we're trying to sell. So you can imagine, like, if you look at advertisers who already got this wrong. So you look at, like, let's say, for example, Gillette. Gillette decided they were, like, whether the message is you agree with the message or you don't disagree with the message, the whole concept of toxic masculinity and bringing that to the fore, and then connecting that with their brand of razor blades, et cetera. Now, effectively what they're doing is they're taking, let's say, half or three quarters of their client base, and they are alienating them. Mm. And they're saying, and their revenue took billions of dollars of hits for doing that. So advertisers don't want to be associated, or any thinking advertisers, don't really want to be associated with controversial topics, certainly if they don't actually give it some thought as to what controversy they are associating with. Right. So they put huge pressure on the various big tech companies to actually censor content or only show their adverts next to content which is, let's say, deemed appropriate. And I think that that – so to some extent, we need to sit back and say the fact that we as individuals aren't prepared to pay for these various services, internet services – means that we don't get to have free speech, and we don't get to actually choose. You know, there's a famous saying: "No pay, no say." So who's actually paying for your access?
I'm actually just laughing because I'm thinking about our listeners. They don't pay, and boy, do they have a say.
But the bottom line, they don't. Your advertisers might have a say, but your listeners don't.
It's interesting.
You're quite happy to ignore them because, I mean, so the whole idea is that the advertisers are paying, they have a say. The users of the system aren't paying, they don't really have a say. So if you're really upset about censorship, you know, that's because you're not paying for the service.
Right.
Somebody else is paying for the service, and they get to dictate effectively what that service does.
Right. Okay, so that's the commercial aspect of it.
Yeah, and I think if you actually look at what's quite interesting, when Jack Dorsey responded, he sent out a whole set of tweets explaining their reason for doing it. It basically came down to that. He said he doesn't celebrate the fact that he had to do the ban, but the bottom line is that he had to ask the question, well, was this the correct decision? And he says, well, for Twitter, it was the correct decision. So why is it the correct decision for Twitter? Because they're making their advertisers happy. He realizes that it's not great because, you know, you're now actually getting into a situation where, and he even says it in his set of tweets, which is great. I mean, it's a great set of tweets defending what he did. And he says that, like in terms of this banning and limiting, he says it sets a precedent that he feels actually is dangerous. Because the power of the individual corporation then has, with the power that then has over part of the global public conversation. And he says, well, there's very nice. There's a check on that accountability. So what's the check on that? Is that Twitter's only one small part of a larger public conversation happening over the internet. And if you don't agree with the way that they censure, you just go to somewhere else. But then he actually says in his, this is what makes it so brilliant, is this concept was challenged. So this defense that he put on Twitter's decision was challenged when everyone banned Parler.
Exactly.
Because he said, now that there's a lie to that. We don't have that as an excuse. As big tech, we don't have the open marketplace as an excuse anymore. In other words, big tech is admitting they're turning into a de facto government. And they are choosing, they're not elected, and they're choosing what speech is permitted and what speech isn't permitted. So we need to understand the forces, the economic forces that are really shaping their decisions, which aren't maybe political, but they're very economic.
But that's so fascinating because it almost is some kind of an introspection. The problem with these companies, and I mentioned it on the air before this week, during this week, is that when somebody's challenged legally, you know, this is hate speech, they go through a system, there are, judges, there's transparency, there's cases that are presented with the tech companies, it's very, very opaque. It happens behind closed doors. There's no transparency. We don't have any sense of what that process was or if it was even reasonable. We don't even know who sat in the room and what their agendas were. So isn't that very problematic?
Well, not really. I'm going to tell you why I'm saying not really.
Okay.
On the face of it, it's not problematic. Why? Because like any other business, customers can choose to use that business or not. So, saying privilege that we give you to use our platform, A, right. You're not paying for it.
Right.
So there's a privilege, and we've got certain rules and regulations. We're not going to tell you what those rules and regulations really are. We're not going to be that open about it. Why? Because their defense is that if we publish all the exact guidelines that we use internally, then the bad actors, the people we are trying to prevent misusing our platform, will know the loopholes. It'll be obvious to them what the loopholes are, so we're not going to tell you what those loopholes are. And essentially, because of that, it's almost on purpose, it's kept very, very opaque. And at the end of the day, it is a, you know, that argument works when there's competition. So when there are a whole bunch of other businesses in competition with you, and those, each business has their own practices and it's a privilege to use their service and they can choose who they want their clients to be, et cetera. That works. That argument is solid. But as Jack Dorsey pointed out, that's no longer a valid argument because the big tech monopolies aren't a, they aren't companies in the sense where you can take it or leave it and go to our competition because there's no competition. And I think that's the core part of the problem. Either you have to break up the big tech companies so that there is now competition, but then you've got to actually deal with a lot of the social issues, which we haven't touched yet, to make sure that they socially create enough space for the different parts of society. But the bottom line is, as it stands, with big tech monopolies acting effectively as de facto governments, the fact that they have opaque censorship laws is a problem. So yes, legally it's not a problem because there's this legal fiction that there's competition, but in reality there is no competition.
So one of our listeners, Ivy, saying, so are they saying, in terms of your argument, Jake, are they saying that, for example, at Twitter, that advertisers are happy with Iran threatening to destroy Israel and America?
Yeah, so that's actually it's an interesting question because I think what you're saying is that when Iran threatens that, so let's say we've got a whole bunch of Americans, I suppose what you're trying to do is you're trying to say, are they? Yeah, so I think it's a very good question, and in other words, I don't believe the buyers of the advertising brands are that perturbed with a mullah acting in character. I think they are very perturbed with their neighbor acting in a way that upsets them. Right. And in other words, you're not going to get a whole bunch of activists standing up and basically trying to boycott goods because of a mullah in Iran.
Right.
I think what you are going to do is get a whole bunch of activists standing up because somebody's against Planned Parenthood. So essentially, you're going to have that sort of a you need – the advertisers are only – in other words – what makes the people in America angry? What makes people angry enough to boycott a product? It's only, they only have to censor those things that make people upset that are going to upset the advertisers.
Right.
Mullahs behaving the way mullahs do is not going to upset anybody.
Well, I mean, specifically we're talking Iran and extremism. We're not you're not talking in general. So you're saying, with the Iranian situation, and just to clarify that that's what you're referring to, the Ayatollah threatening America and Israel is almost kind of what we expect from the Ayatollah. That's really what we're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not going to lead to a boycott of
right.
any product.
And Clive's saying, but they shut down the competition parlor. Come on, Jake. Clive, that's exactly what Jake is saying, is that there's this argument that we'll go elsewhere, but then they've shut down the competition. So, in fact, there isn't an elsewhere, which, of course, is the major part of the problem.
That's exactly it.
Right. So
where? I think that it's broader than just the business. So I touched on the business, and maybe part of the question about the advertisers with the Iranian thing, I think the reason is because you need to understand the social aspects, and the social aspects are also play into this. So we just touched on the business aspects, and you can't just look at them alone. You have to understand that actually America is very much becoming an incredibly polarized society. And one way of trying to understand the left and the right is to have this image of an upside down horseshoe. And you can imagine that if you're a centrist, you're sitting on the top, the apex of this upside down horseshoe, and you can either roll left or roll right. And what you actually find is you have the arguments from the left and the arguments from the right trying to balance you and keep you in the center. As soon as you start rolling down one side of the horseshoe, it's very hard. You know, it's almost gravity taking you further and further down. So when you start moving extreme left or extreme right, you almost go all the way down to the bottom.
Mm.
And what you tend to find is you tend to find that you'll have like the Soviet Union, the only way they could come right is almost to implode. When you start going extreme left and extreme right, it's very hard to pull yourself back and come to the center. So I think what we're seeing in America is you're seeing almost the rise of two very different worlds, polarized worlds, the left and the right, the one being, and you can even see it on their map, you know, it's the coastal cities are all left and the center is all right. And essentially what you have is you have all of the big tech companies populated by people on the coastal cities, which are all left. And they have a very left way, it's not liberal. It's a left way of seeing the world. Liberal would be the wrong term because it's actually in many cases is anti-liberal because they'll say censorship is good.
Yeah.
So they'll see anything that's outside of their idea sphere, anything that's okay with them is extreme. We need to get rid of it because this is rhetoric to the extreme. And I would say you actually, a sign of a society moving either extreme left or extreme right, a sign of that society is censorship. So as soon as, because why? Because if you're in the center, you need opinions from the left and the right to keep in the center. You need to get pulled one way or the other. You need to get balanced so that you can keep central. But as soon as you start moving towards the left or moving towards the right, you need censorship to come in, because what that censorship does is it precludes the arguments and it basically disqualifies the arguments that prove your viewpoint untenable, because there's no defense against the particular viewpoint. And if you really show it in the cold light of day, you can see that it's weak. So the only defense is to shut it out. So that's why you get any society that moves to the extreme left or the extreme right introduces more and more censorship. So I think what you're seeing with the rise of censorship in the States, you're seeing a move from the center, and you're seeing and who the governors or who's determining what's correct and what's not. Well, it's the big tech companies which are in the coastal blue states. Mm. So it's a move to the left, and they determining what to censor and what not to. And the reason you're getting a rise of censorship is because you're having the big moving to the left. And effectively, the schism is that the center is still very right in the States.
So
the question is, does the rest of the world, who are also on these platforms, are they happy with the extreme left vetting their content as well?
So are they?
Well, I would imagine not. Well, there are many of us who want to just be in the center, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw, in fact, Clive's raising it, but I know that you and I spoke about it off air yesterday as well. Angela Merkel saying, now going back to Donald Trump, because we are running out of time. I want to circle back to that and now have a look at that in terms of what you've explained. Angela Merkel, the president of Mexico, non-supporters of Donald Trump coming back and saying, hold on a minute, this is a problem.
And Emmanuel Macron. And they're saying it's a problem. Why? Because they recognize the fact that you need arguments from both sides to try and keep a society in the center. You need the pulling to the left and the pulling to the right to keep that delicate society on the top, balanced precariously on the top of that horseshoe. Because the center is where you want to be as a society. You don't want to be extreme left or extreme right. Both of them lead to societies that are problematic, massively problematic.
Mm.
So the moment you start censoring, it's because you're trying to protect your viewpoint. As the moment you start increasing censorship, it means that you're losing the center. You're losing the battle for the center as a society. And I think that's what they're pointing out. And I think they're 100% correct to point that out. The truth is there are legal protections for the big tech companies in the States because actually they aren't government. It's not government censorship. They don't have any of the rules that pertain to government. They are separate corporate entities and they can do whatever they please. The problem is that they're monopolies.
Absolutely.
So that's the issue.
Mm. Jake Shepherd, founder and director at Synthesis. Absolutely fascinating conversation talking about censorship, big tech banning Donald Trump.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.